Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the gentleman nerds. The gentleman nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Gentlemen, gather around and pull up a chair. The Lobot Lounge has hit the road, and for today's show, we are live from ArmadilloCon 2018. We are live. It's always a pleasure to be recording live shows and meeting and talking to so many of our fans and friends. We love the live recordings because our audience, you guys, get to be part of the show. So we're going to speak with you, we're going to get some suggestions, and we're all going to have a really great time. We have a great topic today, modern folk or fairy tales. We're talking about classic folk tales, myths, legends, fairy tales, and how we would reinterpret them for a modern audience and pitch them maybe for film or for television. And to assist us in this effort today, we have recruited a very special guest, author of best-selling contemporary fantasy books for kids and teens, including the Modern Fairy Tale series, the Curse Worker series, Doll Bones, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, The Darkest Part of the Forest, and co-author of the Spiderwick Chronicles and the Magisterium series. She has been the recipient of so many awards, including the Andre Norton Award, the Mythopoeic Award, and a Newbery Honor. It's our great honor to have her with us tonight, our honorary guest, gentlewoman nerd, the wonderful Holly Black, ladies and gentlemen. Also in the lounge, as always, is Mr. Aaron DiArrive.
Hello. And I am fortunate enough to be seated next to the pagan goddess in human form, Holly Black herself. So I am very, very happy right now.
He is very, very happy. Joining us also is Mr. Ben Gibbs. Not with us today is Mark Finn, but we have set an honorary place for him, and we poured him his favorite beverage. I'm Joseph Fortinos. I'm your host and emotional touchstone. Welcome to the Gentlemen Nerds Podcast. Before we get into this, I thought maybe, I was really kind of nervous about today's show, and I thought, I really want to give us a boost, so I brought a good luck charm. I thought I'd just go ahead and put this on. What? Am I doing this wrong?
We have to explain. We had so many Gentlemen Nerd podcast episodes ruined because we mentioned The Thing. We called it by name, and then our sound would go out, Skype would crash.
Time itself would
fall. Yes, yes.
I'm just going to check the recording.
Yeah, go check the recording.
Yeah, exactly. Just the presence of that thing.
I got confused. I thought that was a good thing. I'm sorry. Well, we know what we're talking about today. We're talking about modern fairy tales, legends, myths. And with, of course, Holly Black's help, we are going to reinterpret them and come up with some nice pitches. So, it is now time, ladies and gentlemen, here in the lounge. We turn it to you. Anyone got a myth or fairy tale? Well, there's a hand right there.
Wow,
right,
yeah. The first hand that went up eagerly, too. Yes, sir.
Three Goats Gruff.
Billy Goats Gruff. Billy Goats Gruff. Very nice. Yes, yes.
Billy Goats Gruff.
And for those of you who are unfamiliar with that tale, it tells a story of three goats that are trying to cross a bridge, a troll bridge, and the troll. And please jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, if I remember this incorrectly. Comedy works in rules of three. Apparently, so do goats. So the smallest goat comes up, and the troll tries to get it, and then the middle goat comes up, and the big goat comes up and bats the troll off the bridge. That's pretty much it, right? Did I miss anything?
I think that's pretty much it.
That's it. Okay.
Pretty much it.
There's that trip-trapping across my bridge.
That's right. There's that trip-trapping across my bridge.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's a good one, because we're starting out with essentially anthropomorphic animals. So I don't know that a modern update, and you guys disagree with me if you think so. I think if we were casting it as a modern day show or movie, I think they become human. You know, we find some human equivalent of goats and a troll. Now the troll part is easy. The world is full of trolls. But I don't know. What do you think? What do you think,
Ollie? I mean, I think you could definitely. I mean, I think that it is. It's a very simple folktale, and it's you know, and I think that it is a long leap to people. I think that your animated, fun, kids movie, your Shrek-like kids movie, to me feels like already taking it a step further, and I feel like people feel. Feels like maybe a little far.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay.
What if the goats were people that were on Match.com trying to find the perfect match, and the troll is... Well, hear me out.
I like where you're going.
And the troll is, you know, maybe a serial killer or a bad person. And, like, he takes one girl, meets them, and then she disappears. And the friend goes and tries to follow her steps and goes to the same... And, you know, and his call name on Match is Trip Trap, or something like that. And there's the call to... So he follows her, or she her friend follows her and goes to the same, meets the guy, and then she disappears. And then finally, their best buddy, who also works for the police department, the big goat, she... I'm grasping at goats here. But yeah, then she comes, and of course they track him down. It's a police procedural, I think. And we could do it as a miniseries.
But they're people. They're not.
They're human.
Okay,
yeah,
they're humans.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
do you think?
It's called Gruff.
Gruff!
Yes! And see!
Gruff! It's like the shield. Gruff.
Love it.
Oh my God! No, I'm with this. I think it's an FX show. It's gritty. But there's a lot of human interest in that. The girls are good friends.
Yeah,
they're they're a lot of them are from small towns. They've come to the big city for the first time, so they're not aware of the danger of trolls.
And the big goat, the big police officer goat, you know, she's been there for a little bit, so she kind of takes care of them. She feels like the mother hen. She watches over the other two, and she's like kind of like their guardian.
Maybe the way he hunts is he's looking for actresses, or he's having a casting thing, so you do get thing to pull in the starlets.
Maybe it's not a match. Maybe it's like an audition. Like he's got
Isn't there an actual case like that, where the guy was soliciting models through some sort of service, and then he would
Bridge Productions come to an audition. Bridge Productions.
Gruff. Fridays on FX. Gruff.
I think we got it.
I'm doing season 10 of Charmed all over.
Yeah. So, is there any magic at all in it? I mean, is there anything supernatural about the show at all?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think so either. I don't think it's necessary.
I think we've got a pretty good setup, you know. And at the risk of going Once Upon a Time, I think we're doing a job of making these human characters reflect their base, simple fairy tale, you know, origins.
Right.
You know, it's a very simple, like you said, a fairy tale.
I wonder if, though, next season you just retell a different, like you do Three Little Pigs next season.
Oh, so sort of an American Horror Story kind of approach to it. That is interesting. Vincent D'Onofrio as the troll, of course. I'd buy that show.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. All right.
I had a gentleman in the back who was very eager.
I see a great chance for a redemptive story.
Okay.
In that the troll is the unjust accuser of the unjustly accused. And the first one doesn't seem to have the wherewithal to defend himself against the world who sees him as an outcast.
Uh-huh.
And the second one has some idea that they're okay, but still the troll manages to point the finger at him and have the world still looking down upon the second goat.
Yeah.
But then the third goat comes along and sets the troll straight.
And
in fact, they are not outsiders, that he is simply a very poor judge of parents.
Ah, and that third, are they attorneys,
or
are they just...
Yes.
All right.
They're
all
from Texas, and they wear really big hats and boots.
Okay.
We got
three attorneys.
So sort of a southern court procedural is what we're turning it into.
Some guy's name is William. They call him Billy for short.
Yes, of course. That is an obvious one, yeah. No, I think we decided to go with they're humans. They're humans.
They have goatees.
Yes!
If we're going for the I said the girls have goatees. Oh, you meant the other one. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's. Oh, you know what? Yes, I think one should have a faint, or maybe a narcoleptic.
Yeah. A narcoleptic.
And they always blame one of them for everything?
Yes. Yes.
Scapegoat.
It's a pygmy goat.
Oh my gosh.
The possibilities are endless, folks.
Still
little
here.
Pygmy goats.
Yes. I like
all right.
It.
Okay. All right. Any other suggestions? Yes? Oh, gosh.
That's a classic. And wow. Hansel and Gretel, in case those of you who slept through nursery rhyme school, is there a nursery rhyme school?
Sure.
Tells a story. Two little, I guess, German or Bavarian kids wandering through a dark forest, or they get abandoned by their parents, I think, and they wander through a dark forest, and they find a house made out of candy, and they in the house is a witch. There's always a witch. And she calls them in, and she starts to feed them, Hansel and Gretel. They start to feed them with the food because she's fattening them up. She wants to cook them and eat them horribly. And at one point, towards the end, I guess it's Hansel? Hansel pushes the witch into the burning oven, saving her and the sister. Gretel. Hansel's getting fat and eating, and Gretel's thinking, hey, something's wrong. Yeah.
And Hansel is sticking a bone that he found in the cage out so that the witch keeps thinking he's not getting fatter as he is getting fatter. Okay.
Because witch has terrible eyesight. That's
terrible eyesight.
There you go. Yep.
So thing... Bavarian cream. Yes, many things filled with Bavarian cream, which is making Hansel fatter. The thing that's always interested me about Hansel and Gretel, from a retelling perspective, is so we have the parents who, in a period of famine, you know, there's always a stepmother, and so in this case, she's supposed to be the stepmother. You know, she convinces her husband to take the children out into the woods and lose them. First time they go, Hansel brings rocks, and the rocks catch the moonlight, and he's able to follow them home. Second time, he's less prepared, brings bread. And the birds eat it, so he cannot find his way home. However, when they get home, eventually, with all the witches' loot and whatnot, it turns out Mom is mysteriously gone.
I don't
remember. And so Mom is so clearly the witch, right? She's gotta be, right? She's just gone?
I don't remember that part.
So she's like, honey, send the children into the woods.
Wow.
So she would do that in a retelling, like
a little candy house all to herself somewhere.
She slips out and murders and eats children. If I were retelling this, I would absolutely have so modern day retelling. You know, we see the happy family at home, and then we see her in her like den of evil.
Okay. All right. I never even thought that it might be the actual stepmother who was also the witch.
Mm-hmm. So did they never? When they come home.
So did they never notice that she had really bad eyesight as the stepmother?
I mean, in the fairy tale, like she is not, but it's such a coincidence.
Yeah, that is a coincidence.
Maybe she has a glamour on that they don't, obviously, because they don't go, hey, it's a stepmother in a candy house. Cool. They think it's somebody else. So maybe she's disguised herself when she's with the family, perhaps?
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. I think magic will be a big part of this. We have to use some
supernatural. Definitely supernatural.
I mean, it could be. Obviously, she can just be a, serial killer of some kind, right?
True.
Like a candy-crafting serial killer. Like she can...
Like Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Sure. I almost know... You know,
kill children and turn them into, I don't know.
I almost though want to flip the poverty thing. I almost see this as it's the kids who are her heir to a big fortune.
A candy fortune?
And could be. And the stepmother wants to get rid of the kids.
Mm.
She wants to inherit all of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's plotting some way to get rid of them, so she gets all the cash. But then how does she also then become the villain? And is trying to destroy them. Oh, Ben.
She uses her boyfriend's house because that's her little something sweet on the side.
Oh.
So the boyfriend is in on the, maybe it's a kidnapping plot.
Yeah.
So the boyfriend is in on the kidnapping plot. Yeah. She makes
it. A lake house, like a creepy Bavarian lake house.
Of course, Bavarian, Bavarian. Yes.
So, elements of Fargo, elements of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I like it so far. It's
in fact, you know what? You can do this as like a Twin Peaks kind of thing. It's a series. And there is a candy heiress lives in this town, and the two kids have disappeared. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out what happened, where did they go, and of course, if we want a little bit of the supernatural, because it's Twin Peaks, weird stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Weird stuff happens around this town.
Wait, you've lost me. Who is the candy heiress? I thought they were
The guy, right. No, I'm saying the evil stepmother is trying to get rid of the two kids who are the kids of the Willy Wonka candy guy. Yes. So I didn't mean heiress. I meant heir.
So they go off. They're taken
correct.
Off.
Mm-hmm. Correct. She takes them to the lake house.
Right.
So that her boyfriend can figure out what to do with them, because he's not sure she wants to off them right away. So she wants to send them off, and then she's like, "Oh, where are they?" And of course, the town is all worried. Now, of course, so who's the protagonist? Whose eyes are we? Is it the investigator that comes in that the candy guy hires to figure out what happened to?
Are you suggesting on this story? Do you have a suggestion?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, it couldn't be Twin Peaks itself, but a log lady-like character. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and the crazy Ralph of the town.
Ooh, now what if... Wait. Okay, this is cool. What if there is a witch in there, but again, total reversal, the witch is actually helping them. She's not the villain in this. It is the evil stepmother who's the villain, and the witch that they think is the one that's going to be the evil one is actually going in, helping her, helping the kids, trying to get them back to their family. And for whatever reason, the witch hates the stepmother. Maybe they knew each other from some other association.
Well, you could.
They could be sisters.
You could have this getting away from this. So they're taken to our Bavarian lake house, right? And they're going to be murdered, but they actually get out.
Right.
Because that's a great piece of business. It's a great piece of business to have kids get out.
Absolutely.
And then running through the creepy forest at night, and then coming upon the shack, right? Instead, because this is a reversal.
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming from great fanciness to not this beautiful, delicious place, but this like scary hovel in which they hide and then are discovered by this old woman who I don't know if she needs to be an actual witch to represent.
She
you know what I mean?
But like, I love her having some ability.
Herbally stuff and like weird, you know, small town folklore.
What if the old woman was the victim of a previous plot by the evil stepmother? Maybe her grandchildren were killed, and she'd been married before, or something like that. Yes, Skyler.
I want her to be the first wife.
The first wife.
Wife number one. Yeah. I want to see Stevie Nicks in that role.
She's already on.
What about so because we have the heir the. The guy with the fortune is dead, though, right? And this is the stepmother who's executing this plan.
Or he could be still alive.
But bear with me for a minute, because she has her honey, who has the Bavarian love shack, correct? Which I think you need the distance.
Yes.
To make it not obvious. What if this is his mother, or his first wife?
The Bavarian lake house owner's first wife.
Correct.
Okay.
Someone who has a relationship to him, but also knows, so that she is kind of, so you have this character who has ambivalence, who like has a reason to maybe turn them in and could have a financial benefit, but like maybe also doesn't want to.
I like her being the mother. Because she doesn't want to betray her son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But doesn't want to go all the way against him.
Exactly.
And he's already done, and the thing is, he's already in over his head.
Yes.
He hasn't done the worst thing yet, but he would be in a lot of trouble. And
the mother, in fact, knows that he's being manipulated by this evil woman.
Right.
Who's pushing him to do even more and more, like, maybe she wants him to kill them, and he's not comfortable with that.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, go totally psycho, okay?
evil stepmother has driven the father insane. He goes to the cottage with the cookies and the candy, and he dresses up like his mother, and he's conflicted and wants to save his kids, and he wants to kill them.
So we
wow.
With a split going on there. Okay, I like it.
We just went for a totally different show there.
Well, one thing I like about Hansel and Gretel, the myth or the fairy tale, is that the kids kind of save themselves. I always liked that because you, as a kid reading it, you thought, well, I thought, oh God, these kids are going to eat and blah, blah. Oh no, they fight back. They actually push the witch in the oven and they get away. I like to make it a little more kid-focused. I want to, I'm not saying we go on an adventure like the Goonies, but I think that it'd be kind of nice to have the kids as the central characters.
But wouldn't the kids be developing a relationship with the mother, though?
But
they are, in essence, saving themselves by finding allies.
But whoever's telling, we've been telling the story, we're going to tell it from, there's got to be somebody's point of view we're telling this from. Who's our focus?
I agree. I like the kids, too. But I do like the idea that they come in, because I think that for kids to go on a journey, like part of their journey is always, okay, we were in this really bad situation and now we're going to go to an adult and the adult is going to fix it. And when you realize that she is the mother, even if she didn't intend to do anything bad, when you realize that she's the mother of the guy whose house you were in and you were going to be killed, it's that moment of disillusionment where you realize, oh, I can't trust adults anymore.
Yeah.
We're on our own, and we run out of her house, and now we have to figure out how to solve this ourselves. And that is like that real moment of child terror.
Yeah.
And it's that a great twist, too. Really, it's a great twist that they've been sort of trusting this old woman, and you have that scene where he comes in, and they're like, there he is, that's him! And he looks at the old woman and says, hi, Mom.
Yeah, good.
No, I like this.
Is that the end of our pilot? Or is that the end of, is that Sweeps? What is it? Where are we?
That's a good question.
I think it's Sweeps. That's the end of the season, I think.
Really?
That's a cliffhanger.
But that's true, because there's all the build-up to establishing the family, establishing the stepmother. Yeah, I think we end on the, oh my God, it's his mother.
Yeah.
Because this whole time we think, oh, they're going to be helped by this kind old woman.
Right.
Okay, no, that's good.
But she's stalled, right? One. She's dragging her feet. She hasn't taken them to the police. What's going on?
You know, they want to go. No. This woman, the police are in her pocket. She's paid them all off.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, wow. I would watch this show.
I would doing the cuddle?
Oh, God, what can be gruff?
Not a whole lot.
Gretel. Maybe if it was just Gretel.
Isn't there already one? Isn't there already one called like Dark Forest or isn't there a series or something or a movie called Dark Forest? Because I thought that might be kind of nice. Or The Urban Forest.
We can't get the rights, but Candyland.
Yeah, that's true. If his fortune is like a Hershey's kind of
right.
Candy.
Have you had something, buddy?
Why not at the end?
Uh-huh.
All of them actually live in a ghost world, and they're all dead by then.
They've been dead the whole time? They're in purgatory? It was purgatory?
No, I would say that's the fifth season when we're out of ideas. And it was all just a dream. But I like that. I like you'd make a good network executive.
Because he's dragging this sucker out for five seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
What do we do now? I know. It was all a dream.
Yeah. A Dream is season 3, Jacob's Ladder season 5. Right?
Yes.
That's correct. Yes, correct.
All right.
Could the kids train as ninjas because of the kidnapping and the growth?
No, that's just ridiculous. We're being serious.
That's the CW spinoff.
That's the CW spinoff
where the kids finally get their revenge and they come back.
In the crossover, the officer from Gruff, Billy McGruff, she shows up looking for the kids.
Oh my God, it could be a crossover.
No,
that's good. God, that is really, really solid.
That's
awesome.
New Bavaria.
I don't think we get the rights to that, but yeah.
That was almost a spit take, which, as we all know, is the root of all comedy. Truly. Brilliant stuff.
All right.
We got two under our belt. Now we've been doing TV. Maybe we should shoot for movies, motion picture this time?
Whatever you guys are comfortable with.
I think Pinocchio can be retold as Cyberpunk.
Pinocchio, Cyberpunk?
Cyberpunk, Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Pinocchio, the story of a lonely old man who carves a boy, a son, out of wood. And at night, the boy is brought to life. Now, I'm I'm getting total Disney mind here, so there's probably a darker version out there. I'm almost positive.
No doubt.
So there's a fairy brings the Pinocchio to life, and he's still wood. He's not real yet. He's still wood. And Geppetto takes him into his arms and raises him as his son, and he sends him to school. And it's a cautionary tale to avoid temptation and not go to Pleasure Island to get turned into a jackass and things like that. But in the end, it's about a father's love for his son, family, maybe. And there's no mother involved. There's just father and son. So the story could be really focused on that relationship. Now, we're talking about a man who carved a boy out of wood and it came to life. How do you interpret that for a modern audience?
Well, and then he becomes a real boy, right? That is the ultimate end. Because he becomes animate but not real, right. And then real,
and then
whatever
flesh.
Real. And I think that is a sort of a key problem in like where can he go? Like what is real?
Right.
Well, what's the name of that movie that basically did the Pinocchio's Ex Machina? Ex Machina, right? Yeah, it's basically an AI. Pinocchio is an AI who's gaining awareness. And that becomes more of a Frankenstein story in that the AI turns on its creator and kills her creator. But
in this sense, the AI would be a good
spirit, AI.
A good program.
What's AI kind of is a Pinocchio story,
that's
too,
true,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Although in the end, he does not get turned into a real boy, but the mechanical aliens find him, correct? Yeah.
Wasn't there one where they download a computer personality into a real person? There was I can't think of the name of it, but there was a computer they were trying to save, and in the end, to save the computer, they pull out the program and inject it into somebody or download it into somebody's brain. It's a hookup, and suddenly that person's inside the real boy body or the real flesh body.
Yeah, I remember something like that. Was that a short? Was that a...
Eureka? Maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. Yeah. But the idea of becoming real from being something that's inanimate, and I think if we're doing modern, we have to go computer. We have to go
artificial. Yeah, it has to be an AI of some sort or a synthetic organism of some sort.
Right.
Yes?
I was just going to suggest the next topic.
Are we done with Pinocchio? And Pinocchio has, to be fair, people have done the Pinocchio story, especially because of our fascination with artificial intelligence and artificial people. Yeah.
Well, I think if you're going to do it, I think what you have to do, let me just say this before we go on, is I hope you scale it up, right?
Okay.
Scale up production. Like, shoot past Pinocchio really, shoot past that really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have some kind of actual, piece of business where you either become real or you don't kind of thing.
Right.
Where, maybe you have multiples of Pinocchios, and so some make it and some don't, and you have you know what I mean? What you do is not have the whole story be the thing that defines the shape of the story itself, but have it be the precursor to the story.
Yeah.
And then you tell the story from the point of view of the police officer who has to hunt down the ones that didn't become real. Pretend to be real.
It's
just Blade Runner.
Yeah. That is just Blade Runner, yeah.
No,
maybe it has all been told.
But to be fair, there's been so many stories about what it is to be human, AI, and all of that kind of thing.
What
because
if it's
we're clones? Fascinated by it.
What are their clones? What are their experimental clones? And they're being bred for an army. And,
that's
and
the island.
Based on a bounty hunter that they found. And they made, never mind.
Or the island is clones. People, rich people clone bodies to get spare parts, and the clones realize, heck no, we're not going to be spare parts.
Right.
We are our own people. Yes, Patrice.
Let's do Little Red Riding.
Oh, gosh. One of my favorites.
Indeed, by saying the shame and the fear is.
So,
Little Red Riding Hood, the theme of it, the Don't Talk to Strangers theme, the warning of the Don't Talk to Strangers theme, Little Red Riding Hood can also be arguably a werewolf story, where the wolf is speaking to Red and asking her where she's going, and, you know, the idea about meeting a stranger in a park and, you know, that guy is obviously into you and he's asking a lot of questions. It could be online, it could be, you know, dating sites, it could be out here in the lobby of this hotel. You never know, and that's the point. You don't want to talk to these people, and that's the warning of Little Red Riding Hood. Now, in the story, the original Grimm's fairy tale, Red doesn't make it. The wolf eats her. End of story. Well, adaptations followed after that, of course, and they wanted to lighten it up a bit, and there was a whole thing about a hunter and swallowing her whole and rescuing her by cutting open the wolf and getting her and grandma out and filling his belly with rocks and sewing that up, and the wolf wakes up and goes, oh my god, my belly's full of rocks, I feel like crap. This is all part of the various adaptations of it, but at its core, what is it?
Well, so I was, to your point about the original having, having her die, I was at a conference with Terry Windling, who told a story that was older than that, where she lived.
Oh.
And what she did was she was, she would take off her garment and say, well, what should I do with this? And he said, throw it on the fire. Mm-hmm. You're not going to need it anymore. And then she said, well, I have to go to the bathroom. I have to pee. And he said, pee in the bed. And she said, I won't. And so he ties her to this thing and lets her go outside. And then she manages to slip out of it and runs. And she's crossing a river. And there's these washerwomen. And they hold the sheets tight for her to run across. And then when the wolf comes, they make them loose so he falls in the river and drowns.
Hmm. Wow.
It was such a fabulously weird and different adaptation. But it also talked about the way the community, like communities of women keep girls safe. And like it really did interesting things. And you can see why it is not necessarily.
Right.
But it does, I think, open up possibilities for, a different way of looking at the story, too.
Okay, you know what? I just got a great way to tell that story.
What if it
could be a movie. I think it's a movie.
It's a movie.
What if you had a community that realized that these predators are out there, and they're plentiful, and they have, Red is their bait. She is the one that finds these predators, gets them to come to her town, mm-hmm. and the town murders them. The town kills these predators. Mm. And that's what they do. They lure, hunt, and eliminate predators.
Town of ghouls.
Oh!
Lure, hunt, and eat their predators.
Yes. And that's how they survive. And yes, that's how they survive in the modern world without being discovered. They're not horrible monsters. They are exterminators.
R. Chetwin Hayes wrote a story like that with a village of ghouls that bring people in. They made an episode or a tale. They told one of those stories in The Monster Squad with John Carradine and Vincent Price. The Monster Club. Yes, it was in the village of ghouls, and they would lure people in, and they would. But I like the idea of them doing it for good reasons.
Right.
If they're going
to
eat.
That there is a specific one of them that they have trained to be Red Riding Hood, to go and out and find these guys and bring them back. It's almost who saw Get Out? Who saw Get Out?
Yeah.
It's that same thing, except she's not bringing them back for that horrible purpose.
Right.
She's bringing back predators to be devoured by the community.
The ultimate to catch a predator. I mean, she's online.
Yes, it is the ultimate to catch a predator.
And she's, luring them back, and then the rest of the way.
Yeah, a monster movie version of Little Red Riding Hood that's to catch a predator. Right. Wow. Okay, I'm going to write that one. yes, something to add to that?
Just to add, there's an episode like that in the original Patrick Meade TV series, The Avengers, called Murders.
Yep.
Mm. So you have an entire village committing contract killings.
Oh, nice.
And again, were they targeting bad people?
No, they're targeting people that prior arrangements are made for this person to show up in the village to get murdered, and the coroner's verdict is natural causes, and they have an entire village full of witnesses.
Huh, very nice.
What I love about the village doing this is that you can have a situation where, clearly the guy that's coming in to do nefarious things is the villain, but because of all of the things that ends up happening, the audience actually feels sorry for this poor schmuck. And they're like, God, I hope he can get away. And at first you're like, get him. And then afterwards you're like, oh, this poor schmuck, he's going to be eaten. I love it flipping the tables that way.
I take your point, though, that that's a concern, that we really want to be on the side. Like, we don't want to be on the side of someone.
Yeah, the sexual predator.
Right, no, of course not. Of course not.
And so we're going to have to figure out a way to weight it.
Right.
So that is not our position.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. Or there could be the sort of man with one red shoe issue where they think they have the right guy, but it's a mistaken identity. It's not the guy that was being lured.
Right.
Somehow he stepped into the wrong place. They thought it was the right person. They start targeting him. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through, maybe Red can realize that's the wrong guy. And so she's trying to help save him because she knows that this is not the person who's supposed to have been eaten. And by then, the village may be, oh, well, we're just hungry. Let's just eat him. And she's like, no, wait, wait, then we're as bad as they are. Sorry.
Yes.
Ghouls gone wild. Oh, my God. No. Elena, Elena. Elena. Okay, so you want us to move past Red Riding Hood? Okay, no, I'm that's good. Maybe I'm just saying, are we done with, anybody have any other suggestions for Red Riding Hood?
Why don't we make a second movie where she lives, and then she goes on into life and moves to, like, New York City.
Okay.
And lives with all the fairy tale people. Wow. And they live life.
That's Once Upon a Time on ABC.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's Fables
a little bit
and Once
Fables,
Upon a Time.
Yeah.
I like it.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think I...
You know what? Interestingly enough, I like the idea of them going to New York City. I really do. Good job.
Yeah.
I like that.
Village. Yeah. The village.
The village. Yeah.
Or what's the one that we were watching that had the all the monsters living in that little small town in Texas?
Oh gosh.
Midnight Texas. There we go. Yes. All the monsters decide to move to a small town in Texas because that's of course what they would decide to do. Small town in Texas.
Yeah.
All right.
So we covered Billy Goat's Gruff.
Do we have time for one more?
Well, I think so.
We have time
for
one more.
Billy Goat's Gruff. We've covered. What have we got? Hansel and Gretel. We did a little bit of Pinocchio,
yep.
And then finally a little bit of Riding Hood.
Yep.
Sir, do you have a suggestion?
Are you familiar with Stone Soup?
Yeah.
Is that anything like the? Correct me if I'm wrong. There is a greedy man with a bunch of food and stuff, and his daughter or granddaughter is trying to get him to make soup for the village, and she says, "I'm just gonna make a stone soup," and he says, "That looks whatever," and they keep adding more to it. I'm sorry?
They're soldiers.
Right.
Okay, we're just
going to
make some stone soup.
Yeah.
Anybody
got
a rock I can use?
Right. And he's like, it's the best stone soup ever.
Rocks,
yeah.
Some water.
All right.
It's like, oh, well. And they thought, well, this was cake better with a little bit of this. Like, wait a minute. I might have some.
Better. Yeah, yeah. And they put it on. That's right. Yeah. Onions and potato. I mean, they really start going to town, you know, just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Okay. I actually do know. I for some reason I thought it was a different name. I had a different name in my brain, like a bone soup, where they used a bone, and then they kept adding it. But stone soup.
Yeah, stone soup. Okay. Yeah, I have heard of that.
All right. Okay, that's a good one. How do we take that, the story of the stone soup and the soldiers, perhaps we could use soldiers, and put it in a modern setting, jazz it up a bit, give it a little panache. And,
it's a heartwarming Hallmark movie,
I think, maybe,
right?
Because it all—it
have to be. It would
it's
have
right?
to be.
Yes. Where like it's over the holidays.
Yeah.
It's cold. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Christmas no, absolutely.
Soup.
No, I think
Christmas soup.
We could
yeah.
call it Christmas soup. No, I think this is definitely a family. Yeah, Hallmark Channel, Disney Channel. Because yeah, that's the lesson that's being taught, right? For people to share and to give of what they have.
There's also a Tom Sawyer element of this, where this guy, these soldiers, they kind of pull the wool over their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, let's paint the fence. It's really great. You want to paint this fence? Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
You know, there is a bit of a...
Yeah,
right, exactly. I'll trade you my frog for this fence, so you can paint for me. So there's a little bit of that, but yeah, I think in the end, it's going to be, maybe they all eat the soup together, like the Who's in Whoville, and they sing a song or something. You know, they're pretty happy about it.
Now, we have to answer the question, though, why was the town so, like, unwilling to share their food? Like, what is going on?
In the original one, it has been a lot of war, and there's been a lot of soldiers come through.
Okay.
And at the beginning of the war, when the soldiers had come through, because that meant the war was ending, they were happy, they fed the soldiers.
Right.
This is soldiers' numbers, 1,000, 1,001, 1,002.
Right.
They don't want to feed them anymore.
Hmm. What if this out. Is... I mean, because this is our Hallmark movie, right?
Right, right.
This is a family that has come apart. They no longer gather for the holidays. No one wants to host, right? Nobody, everybody has like a reason why they can't. I mean, really, right? You can't come over my house. We're too busy. Nobody wants to do anything.
Like the stone turkey.
And
it's
then
like Thanksgiving.
You have,
stone turkey.
Okay. And then you have like one of the kids decides they're going to host. And they're going to make like... peanut butter sandwich. Like, you know what I mean? Something like that.
Right, right. And so then that.
Oh,
right.
Fudge.
Yeah. And then the family. No, I love that. If they found some recipe that they're trying to do and slowly win over, like, oh, well, I can give a little bit for that, for grandma's recipe. I'll put in some of my fish, or I'll get some of my onions, or...
You can make the recipe something really esoteric and weird that has to be revealed over the course of the story.
All right.
Where it's something that everyone's like, well, you know, no, I don't want to deal with that.
And or like, what if it's something funny, like she made a roasted goose? Like, it's something ridiculous where you have the kids, then you have all the funny montage of the kids chasing around geese because they don't know where to get a goose. they're like, well, there's one, you know, there's one by the lake, and, like, they're chasing the goose, and the goose is biting back. You can't really grab the goose. And, like, you know,
geese
like,
are
you,
mean.
Right, no, it's a terrible idea. And, like, but they don't know, they're, you know what I mean, they're kids, and so you have, like, these, you know, like, you have some funny business.
I like the idea of the family starting to get together again. They don't celebrate, and then by the end of the story, they've all shown up so they can contribute something to the meal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's very much like the Thanksgiving movie that we watch every year. Pieces of April. It's very much like that.
And they have like all a grudge. Yeah. Like each one of them has wronged the other in an actual way that seems hard to resolve.
Yeah.
And so over the course of it, you actually get to do some decent business about resolving like the real breaks in the family,
like,
that are legitimate and painful.
Why have there been these grudges for so long? Why have we not addressed it? Skylar.
Just picking up on that, the food is no longer scarce, but it kind of.
Right.
Right.
The time and attention are the commodities that are scarcity built.
Right.
That coming together, you know, like, well, we can't do that because Timmy has soccer and we can't do that color because they're all overcommitted. We're all doing that. We can't waste our time by coming together.
And I think that's incredibly timely, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a fantastic theme.
Mm-hmm.
That people just don't have time for each other anymore. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah, and that's where the kids are trying to do it, but they're failing. They're chasing geese, and they're coming back with bites everywhere. And so the parents are finally kind of shamed into like, oh my gosh, are we really going to let them continue to get attacked by geese? No, let's help. You know what? I'm going to come home early from work. I'm not going to work late tonight because these guys really want to do this. And you're right. And in that process, you're figuring out, what are the grudges? Why does the sister not talk to the brother anymore? Right. Why do they all of them hate their aunt so much, or whatever it is? And slowly, that is all resolved because these kids wanted to do this Christmas banquet. That's a fantastic idea. Yes.
The
little card table.
Yeah, that should not be a nice visual.
All the kids are at the big, all the parents at the little card table. Can I get some more potato salad?
Yes. One of the things that
Jacob
said to relate to the theme of how nobody has time for anything anymore is because we're all jacked in.
Right.
What if part of the plot is there's a power outage and everybody is forced
Right.
And actually talk to each other.
Exactly. And then they really hate each other.
This is why we don't come home for the holidays.
No, you know what? That would be such a wonderful holiday movie. That would be such a wonderful Grandma's Recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma's Recipe. Huh? That's true. That is an instance where stone soup works just fine.
Stone soup. I like it. Yeah.
Yes, well, that's the Bill and Ted version of that, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir, up front.
Why not have Chris Pratt and Chris Hemsworth as two of the soldiers?
Okay.
Okay. Sure.
Yes.
And what was the last one?
Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pratt.
Okay.
Yes. And they're the two soldiers that walk around without their shirts all the time.
And let's just throw Chris Evans in there too.
And Chris Evans. All the Chris's. The triumvirate of Chris's.
Yes. Onward Chris
soldiers. Oh jeez.
So we had Hansel and Gretel. Do we have time? We have Hansel and Gretel still on the dock.
That's true. We haven't really addressed.
Hansel. Oh, sorry, not Hansel. Sorry, Goldilocks.
Goldilocks.
Oh, Goldilocks. Yeah, we did say Goldilocks.
Right. Goldilocks on the dock.
We could probably squeeze Goldilocks in real quick.
Yeah. Okay. So Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Just to quickly sum up, you all know the story. Three bears living in the woods in a house, and they go for a walk because the porridge is not quite ready yet. So they take a walk, I guess. Goldilocks wanders in, breaking and entering, really, and breaking so many laws, a little juvenile delinquent, and eats their food and breaks some furniture and sleeps on their bed. And then the bears come home and they find, oh, my bed's broken, my porridge is gone. Oh, there's a little girl here. She screams, she runs out. End of tale. That's, of course, really brief. So what do we do with this? How do we make Goldilocks and the Three Bears? And my brain
went... Goldilocks is a drug addict breaking into a meth lab.
Okay.
She's like...
I wouldn't mind. Yeah, okay,
right.
I wouldn't mind having Goldilocks be a runaway who breaks into the house of three wonderful gay men.
Oh, I love you.
And these three gay men help her find her confidence and help her accept who she is.
Are they large hairy men?
Of course.
Okay, just checking.
Bears.
No, I got that, Aaron. I got that.
No, wouldn't that be kind of fun?
Yes.
Danny DeVito, sure.
I don't know that Danny DeVito would make a great bear, but Chris Hemsworth.
He was Jack the Ripper.
And Chris Evans all play three bears.
Twinkie bears.
And the
product was just
right.
No, I like that. I like the it's almost like three men and a baby, right? Yeah. But three gay individuals at teaching. A girl from a small town who ran away because she just hated her life, and they really teach her to accept herself and to be proud of who she is.
And accessorize.
And accessorize.
So is this movie?
I would say it's a movie.
Yeah, that's
I would say it's a movie.
Do you want, then, something to have followed her? If you see what I'm saying, trouble follows her then, right? Because sure, you have, you know, you think that's your sort of opening sequence, and
she's running from the mob or drug dealers or something like that.
And she's also gonna because she's gonna have to also bring something to them, right? What is the thing she brings to them? Then what are they like? Those are the two things that I think.
I would say obviously the abusive homophobic boyfriend. Is chasing her, trying to get her. Either she stole drugs. I know, but
too
to keep the drugs.
What a coincidence! I just broke into a house with three gay men.
What
if
she stole?
Is a real homophobe.
You know, but it's Hollywood, so obviously it's going to be that way.
Yeah.
What if she stole money from either a drug dealer she knew or some abusive individual she knew, and so she's on the run. So she's not completely pure, but she needed the money to get out of her situation. And then she comes into this house, and that's what's following her. They want their drug money back. They want to get this girl and get what they want.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is that too on the nose?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Like, it's got to, like, I feel like there's one more thing, though. What's the one more? Like, first of all, we need to know what she teaches them, right? And
right.
I feel like those things are connected.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if...
Maybe they want to adopt it, though, but one of the ones adopted it too.
Or I mean, one of the things that she could sort of help them realize is if there's sort of a love connection that isn't being made, right? If she's the person who's able to sort of see, you know, certain things, or if there's one thing that I don't know if they're roommates, like I don't know exactly their situation,
but
if everybody is in a kind of stasis that she pushes them out of their stasis, I think that would be really useful.
She's the catalyst, right?
And they can teach her, but like she is chaos and introduces chaos into like this stable order.
Yeah, she's Calliope. And both upsets and at the same time helps them focus. Ultimately helps them find what it is that they're looking for.
She's the Galatea to their collective Pygmalion.
I'm sorry?
Could I add to her motivation as to who she is?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
if you're going to go Hollywood and TV, we haven't got a sequel yet to anything in modern times. So she is Holden Caulfield's younger sister and picture in the plot, who hates her parents and is dealing with her older brother's suicide or not, depending on if he's a real character, and Holden's own insanity. And she's just out of her mind, so she runs off to the 3-8 guy's house and she gets Holden.
Uh-huh.
Sequel. All right. Sequel to Catcher in the Rye. As they said, it couldn't be done.
Yes?
Okay, and so the three gay guys, there's a couple, and they have let this friend of theirs move in because he's so devastated by the suicide.
Oh.
That's good. That's good.
Really
no,
good.
That's good. Yeah, that is I really
like
good.
That. I like that.
Damn, Skyler.
Yeah.
You throw out some great fuckers.
But I take it that it is disrupting the relationship, right? That everybody is in this.
It would have
it's
to be.
It's
yes.
like in a complicated
right.
way because
be.
He's.
Yeah.
In fact, the friend who moved in with them might have been a previous partner of one of the two, and so there's that worry, there's the jealousy.
Right.
There's that, is the flame being kindled again? You know, there's that insecurity that comes in.
Yeah. Part of the Goldilocks thing is that she is trying on each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Goldilocks needs to be a god. Because then that changes the whole dynamic.
Wow. A little twink, yes. Goldie twink.
A little otter.
Yes, I like
yeah,
it.
Goldie
yeah.
otter in the three. I don't
well,
know. I kind of like it being a girl. What do you think?
I mean,
what if it's a dog?
No.
it's a golden retriever.
Do you think it works better if it's a guy?
I guess I'm wondering about the, I mean, I'm wondering about the presence of a child that actually is one of theirs.
Oh.
That
oh.
is a biological child.
Three bears and a baby.
Not, well, yeah. but like,
so maybe the kid finds out that one of them is actually her father.
Mm-hmm. No, like that she came to see her father, or came
oh,
because
see.
She has to be like because
I see,
through
I see.
You know the complications of life has
right.
to live with her father.
Right?
Or somebody
here,
who
friends.
Came to see their father who doesn't know.
Yeah.
Maybe
right.
the father doesn't know this is his biological child,
right.
so
right.
she's invaded their house.
We are so close to putting the nail in this coffin, but
right.
Maximilian has just appeared in the doorway there, and he's given us the red eye. So I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our podcast, but don't leave just yet, because The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and is written by Aaron DeArrive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, Joseph Fatinos, and our very special guest, Miss Holly Black, with additional material provided by Looty Lou, Spike, and Gristle. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and The Gentleman Nerds mascot, legendary but nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Gabrielle, which explains why I feel so cold after drinking whatever this is. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never ever gets superpowers is Aaron DeArrive. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher DeArrive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. And please always remember, tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. Our podcast today is dedicated to Kathy Farnash. Keep fighting, keep kicking ass. I'm Joseph Fotinos, reminding you all that Red Skull lives. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
That's so
funny.
Also, that figure's
Thank you so much. It was a delight.
A very merry birthday to you. So blow the candle out, my dear, and make your wish come true. A very happy on birthday to you.
Nice.